Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. I'd like to invite you to visit me at VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, a special report I've written just for you, and it's the non-antibiotic solutions to 10 common infections, and that's VitalityCapsules.com. Also, we welcome your calls on the show. And if you'd like to call in, have any questions, number is 914-338-0695. Okay. Well, today's show is Your Million-Dollar Breath or the Mammogram Hoax. Now, the stuff you're going to hear today is really, really wild. All this information is out there in the regular literature. However, it's not what's emphasized. So we're going to be talking about that. But I want you to keep in mind, disclaimer here, none of this information is meant to treat, diagnose, or cure any disease. And if there's something you're contemplating, of course, discuss it first with your healthcare provider. Okay. I'd like to talk first about kind of why I've picked this topic. I'm really moved to do this topic today because everything I've observed to be the case about mammograms and breast cancer has been just about the opposite of what I was taught in medical school. And it's also the opposite of what the public is being told. And for many years, I thought, well, you know, maybe those experts, the specialists, they've got more information than I've got. Maybe there's something else going on out there I'm not aware of. So today, I want to share what I was taught in medical school, my observations, some common sense conclusions, and some numbers from the standard medical doctors themselves at Mayo Clinic, government statistics, standard sources that actually support these observations. And as always, I will bring you uncommon analysis of these common events. So let's begin. First thing, if you want to understand mammograms, you have to first have some kind of basic concept of breasts. I know it sounds like a really bizarre concept, but we have to get some kind of basic common ground about breasts. What's a breast and what are they for? And the reason I stress this is because in medical school, our background concerning what a breast was is radically different from what a common man walking down the street might appear to be a reasonable conclusion. So let's talk about just a notion of what breasts are. So let's just agree that breasts are something that is designed to feed the infants of our species. So they have a function of feeding infants. Next, they're designed to attract members of the opposite sex. And finally, for the pleasure of the species. So these are three basic functions of the breast. And believe it or not, this is not what was taught in medical school. I entered medical school in 1983, and the latest news at that time, which really hasn't changed much, is that breastfeeding is dangerous for the infant, as the mother may not be eating right, she might have some hidden illnesses or conditions. And further, there's scientifically formulated formulas, of course, by the drug companies And this basically makes breastfeeding obsolete. Now, the party line has changed a little bit. It's like, well, formula is there for women who cannot breastfeed, and of course, many women cannot breastfeed. So bottom line basically is breasts are redundant because we've got breasts, great formula out there. Next, we were taught in medical school that breastfeeding in public was a form of indecent exposure, and there was talk of arresting women who were breastfeeding in public. And if you're your average medical student, one thing you want to do is not break any laws. They kind of screen for those kind of people. So when I heard that breastfeeding in public was going to be criminalized, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm not going to do that. And, of course, we were taught that if a guy brushed up against your breast, why, that's sexual assault. And finally, so you can get some poor guy arrested. And finally, they needed breasts need continual monitoring with self-breast exam and mammograms to watch and monitor for cancer. So, to summarize, by the time I got out of medical school, I understood that my breast could poison my baby, breast milk is obsolete, and breastfeeding in public could get me arrested for indecent exposure, or if some poor guy brushed up against my breast, he could get arrested for touching them, and my breast would, of course, become cancerous and harm me someday, and they required continual attention monitoring. So by the time I graduated from medical school, I was terrified of my breasts. And if someone had offered me a mastectomy at that point, just in case, I might actually have considered it. What happened, basically, was this, you know, really extensive, detailed education succeeded in making my body the enemy and turning me against my body. And this is a mental state that women throughout America are being herded into. This is nothing short of sheer panic. And so you have a woman in this state who's totally forgotten the primary use of her breasts, or suddenly decided that she's not willing to die just so her breasts can feed her baby, give some man some pleasure, or somehow enhance the enjoyment of her life. And so we have free mammogram screenings, which, by the way, are not really free. Mammogram screenings are not really free. If you go to a mammogram screen, they will ask you for your insurance card and attempt to bill. Usually will attempt to bill your insurance. Or they are actually paid for by a hospital or entity that profits from the many false positives and many biopsies that the mammogram will just guarantee or necessitate. So you have free mammogram screenings. Also, there's biopsies that flow from the mammograms, so when the mammogram detects something, then, of course, a biopsy is recommended. And naturally, from the woman's point of view, this is an objective finding. The mammogram said there's something there. It's not just some person walking up to you with a knife saying, can I splice your breast? But as you'll see, there's really not much difference between the two. And then mammograms necessitate mastectomies. 91% of which are actually not needed. And then, of course, we have fundraisers. There's the Race for the Cure, and women and men now are being intimidated into buying all things pink. And there was a time in my life when I would say, you know what, I want this color and not that color, and I'm going to buy whatever color I want of whatever the item is. But now, it's almost like if you don't wear pink or buy pink, you're being insensitive or unpatriotic or uncaring. And so it's been a total undoing of the whole women's lib movement. I mean, the one thing I think was positive about women's lib is that women were allowed to wear whatever color they wanted to. If they wanted to wear pink, well, that was fine, but if not, that's okay. But now we've been herded back into the pink closet, so to speak. I can take a little break now and just mention that you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at blakeradio.com. And please visit vitalitycapsules.com and get your free gift, non-antibiotic solutions to 10 common infections. That's vitalitycapsules.com. And, of course, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Okay, so in my state of panic, and the state of panic of many women in this modern world, mammograms were first introduced to me in medical school. And I was immediately impressed that technology existed to detect breast cancer. Although many women in my family had huge breasts, I mean double F cups, nobody had breast cancer. this is totally opposite of what I was learning in medical school. I learned in medical school that the bigger the breasts, the greater the likelihood of breast cancer. But my family was filled with women with very large breasts who were on in years, and nobody had breast cancer. But I accepted without question that mammograms were a benefit and comfort to such women. Of course, my breasts were rather minuscule, so I was like, phew, that was my risk right there. Also in medical school, students were taught that mammograms should be done on every woman at the baseline at age 40 and every 2 years starting at age 50. I wondered why we did not just do mammograms every year from age 40. And I asked this question because by the time they explained to me what mammograms did, I was like, man, everybody needs these. And so the answer shocked me and it troubled me. Back in 1979, you got to understand, 1979, not exactly yesterday, but well, a long time ago, I was told that doing more mammograms would cause more harm than breast cancer itself. Now, you can imagine how I was just speechless. Like, whoa, I came here to medical school to learn something to help people, and now you're telling me that I'm asking all these ladies to subject themselves to a test that does harm? That was just totally unconscionable to me. And so in medical school, we students work, in the old days, at least 90 hours a week, and even more. Now they have labor rules, and I think you have to allow 8 hours of sleep or something at night. Anyway, I was working these incredibly long hours. And as a totally exhausted, overworked medical student, I really wasn't capable of deep thought, but I did know that I did not need one more thing to worry about. So I asked the next question, why do a test that causes harm? I'll have to skip it. So the answer I got was the equivalent of shut up and sit down. But realistically, think about this. Why bother? You know, it seems to me if all we're trying to do is help these ladies out, you know, help them have a healthier, better life, then why do a test that's actually more harmful than the disease we're looking for? And so I couldn't get a whole lot of details about the harm the mammogram caused. They didn't want to talk about that. And I couldn't get a lot of details about why it was so important to do this test, even though it was a harmful test. What I failed to grasp at that time was that the money was made in treating the cancers that the mammogram caused, the cancers the mammogram aggravated, and in treating the non-existent cancers that the mammogram falsely indicated were there. And so 10 times as much money was made treating cancers that never existed. So doing too many mammograms would cause a dramatic shift in the pattern of the disease, and the public actually might become aware of the true scheme. But again, as a naive 20-something, this was way beyond my grasp. I'd just like to take a break now and say you are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. So please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Non-Antibiotic Solutions to 10 Common Infections. That is VitalityCapsules.com. And, of course, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Now, you guys are probably wondering, why would I give it a free gift, Non-Antibiotic Solutions to 10 Common Infections? Well, it turns out that antibiotic use over time actually increases your risk of breast cancer. So minimizing your antibiotic use is a very effective way of lessening your breast cancer risk by as much as 30%, depending on which studies you read. So definitely do stop by VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Non-Antibiotic Solutions to 10 Common Infections. Okay, so now we know that mammograms cause cancer in women who would never have gotten breast cancer. Now, this is shocking. So if you screen a million, if you do a million mammograms, I don't say screen a million women, if you do a million mammograms, 225 women, those screened, are going to get cancer. Now, mammograms also cause 10 unnecessary mastectomies for every cancer they detect. This means that if you are having a mastectomy based on findings of a mammogram, there's a 1 in 11 chance you actually have cancer, and a 10 in 11 chance that you do not really have cancer, and your mastectomy is medically unnecessary. Even in the 1 in 11 women who have a necessary mastectomy, not all will benefit. Some are going to die of hospital-acquired infections. Others will die of a medical error while in the hospital. Still others will die of the properly prescribed medication they received while in the hospital. And mammograms also cause localized cancer to metastasize or spread and become more harmful. And still others will not see an extension of their life or quality of life because there's an 80% survival of women with breast cancer. And so since there's an 80% survival of women with breast cancer, even if the therapy institute as a result of breast cancer screening produced 100% survival, that's only 20% improvement, or only a benefit of 20% of those women whose cancer was detected. So that's something to just kind of tuck in your back of your brain there. So the track record of harm like this, you'd think this test would be banned. Or at least there should be a mandatory disclosure that should a mastectomy be recommended as a result of this test, then there's a 91% chance that the microscopic exam of the tissue will show that mastectomy was not necessary. So you would think that, you know, how you have a warning label on a package or some drugs with a black box label, that the mammogram might have some kind of label like that, but there is no such label. However, you've been educated, you heard it here. Now, I can tell you some more information, you know, kind of drill in more deeply about the effects of the mammogram. But hang in there, we're going to talk about, you're going to get some good news here and some things you can do that are really powerful to actually help yourself avoid breast cancer completely as opposed to just detecting it early. So this is a study that was done. It's 2000, we actually regularly screened for 10 years. One woman benefited, her cancer was detected. 200 women got false positives and had unnecessary biopsies. And I personally had a breast biopsy at a very early age. If you've ever had a breast biopsy, it leaves an ugly scar. The scar simply does not heal. I would say it's been 30 years at least since my breast biopsy. And the scar is just getting to be where it's not absolutely awful. But I will tell you, it definitely puts a crimp in your bikini wearing, which is a huge issue in your 20s, or even any kind of bathing suit. Or just being intimate with your partner. You see this huge, ugly scar, and you're like, oh, my God, that's all he sees is this huge, ugly scar. And of course, he's probably not paying any attention at all, but that's the way women are. Women worry about those things. So what I'm saying is having unnecessary biopsies is not exactly trivial. In fact, I wrote a little comic strip. I'm going to share this comic strip with you. One lady says, I'm concerned that I may get breast cancer. These mammograms are wearing me out. And a second lady says, girlfriend, I know what you mean. After my first negative biopsy, I decided to just have a mastectomy. There wasn't much left anyway. And a lot of women are actually having this experience. They're getting biopsy after biopsy after biopsy. And, you know, after a certain number of biopsies, you don't even have much breast left. So women are definitely being maimed as a result of these mammograms. Next, 10 women will be unnecessarily treated with surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, and this increases her risk of dying from heart problems and even a second cancer. So as I mentioned before, there's an 80% survival rate with breast cancer. This means that one breast cancer that is found could at best have a 20% chance of benefiting that woman. And she already has an 80% survival rate built in. So we have to question what is meant by benefit, because as I was researching this topic tonight, 20% survival, I said, yay, 80% of women are surviving breast cancer. Oh, wow, that's so great. And then when I say 35% of all women who get breast cancer will die of it, I said, whoa, wait a minute. I thought we cured 80%, but then I forgot. The definition of cure and survival and benefit is living 5 years beyond the date that the cancer is diagnosed. So if you live 5 years beyond the date of diagnosis, you are designated as a cure, a cancer cure. Even though 15% of women go on, an additional 15% go on to die at some point during the rest of their lives. And so this means that really, as I said, only 0.2 of the 2,000 women who were screened for 10 years has a possibility of benefiting. And this, again, it's generously assumed that 100% of those women whose cancer is discovered as a result of screening will live 5 years after the cancer detection date. So just to work with whole numbers here, multiply everything up, get common denominators, that means that in order for one woman to benefit, 10,000 women need to be screened for 10 years. Or one woman needs to be screened for 100,000 years. All right, so 10,000 women need to be screened for 10 years, or one woman needs to be screened for 100,000 years. In other words, the benefits, what a woman has to do in order to benefit from a mammogram, cannot be done in one lifetime. So I think we can all agree that you know, it's unlikely a woman is going to live 100,000 years. And as you'll remember from prior broadcasts, the benefits from cholesterol-lowering drugs takes 1,250 years of use. Well, mammograms have got them beat by almost 100-fold. So instead of needing 1,250 years of use, like cholesterol drugs, mammograms, by comparison, require 100,000 years of use in order to benefit one person. Even a hardcore gambler might pass up a bet whose payoff was in the hereafter, had such poor odds, and required a substantial investment during lifetime. So many women, for example, they are dutifully paying their monthly insurance premiums because they know that it'll pay for the mammogram screening. Or not quite so bad, but they're shelling out cash to pay for mammogram screenings. So this is quite your investment, and it is definitely a gamble. When something has a probability of helping you out and benefiting you long after your body is dead, then, you know, we have to say it's a bit of a gamble. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at blakeradio.com. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com and get your free gift, Non-Antibiotic Solutions to 10 Common Infections. That is vitalitycapsules.com. And, of course, I welcome your calls and questions. And dial number is 914-338-0695. So, just like a cow, women's breasts are being farmed. The same spirit of profit and personal gain that fills the heart of the farmer as he extracts milk from the cow, it's the same spirit of the medical industry as it wraps its propaganda in pink ribbons and promulgates more burdensome and harmful recommendations for your breast. Now, you men out there, you're next, because 1,800 men got breast cancer in the United States in 2010, and there is talk of putting men through the same mammogram routine. So listen up. So let's take a look at the economics here, the money behind what's going on. So the average price of a mammogram is $100. And screenings range from anywhere from $50 to $603. So I'm going to use just the average figure of $100. So we have 2,000 women getting mammograms for 10 years at $100 a mammogram. That's $2 million in revenue to detect one breast cancer. Now, if we talk about benefit, then we have to take that $2 million and multiply it by 5. And so it's really $10 million in revenue is what's being collected. In order for one woman to benefit, $10 million has to be paid to the mammogram industry. That's pretty cool. Now, someone walks up to you and says, hey, give me $10 million, and I'll keep track of you and tell you when you have breast cancer, you would say, hey, you know, get out of here, stupid. But instead, what they've done is they've got women en masse to submit to this. And the bottom line is the folks who make mammogram machines collect more or less $10 million for each woman who benefits as a result of mammogram screening. Then, of course, there's a needle biopsy. Needle biopsies run about $5,000 a biopsy. You need a needle, you need a surgeon, you need a sterile field, you need even more x-ray, of course, to guide the needle, right? And so again, that is another $1 million for these 200 ladies who needed biopsies. But again, wait, that's if we only did 2,000 ladies. We're going to screen 10,000 women, because we have to screen 10,000 women just to benefit one woman. So to keep apples and apples going here, this is another $5 million in needle biopsy payouts. So we've got one lady benefited, and we've already spent $10 million to the mammogram people, and another $5 million for biopsies. And then, of course, there's the mastectomies. We have 11 mastectomies. And this is expensive. $55,000 is what a mastectomy costs these days. And now the plastic surgeon will step into the operating room right after the surgeon and rebuild the breast with false breasts or silicone or whatever the latest substance is that they're using. And so this is a $770,000 revenue from mastectomies. Again, this is the 2,000 women are screened, but we got to screen 10,000 because we want at least one lady to benefit from this whole program, so we have to expand it a bit. So that's another $3.5 million. And so that's $10 million, $5 million, now $3.5 million. And this is from treating unnecessary mastectomies. So these are mastectomies that are done because the mammogram erroneously indicated there was cancer when actually there was not cancer. So this is really, this is serious big bucks. And then, of course, we have the one mastectomy that was necessary because the person actually did have cancer, and that one is $350,000 because, again, five of those are needed to in order for one person to benefit. So as you can see, only $350,000 in medical care costs would have been consumed had the one cancer been detected in the absence of screening mammography. But because of screening mammography, an additional $19 million per 10,000 ladies is realized. And that's like really, that's pretty impressive. It's just tough to get a business model that, you know, that'll produce for you like that. Because again, these 10,000 ladies are not receiving very much in the way of service or outcome. And of course, there's no guarantees. And then you can't even tell if it worked or not. So let's recap. You're going to have 10,000 women get a mammogram every year for 10 years. They're also going to invest 3 hours of their time every year for 10 years. It is 30 hours per lady. And they're going to pay $100 per mammogram, or worse, pay monthly insurance premiums to cover it. So this is 1,000 biopsies, 50 mastectomies for ladies who don't really have cancer, but they're told that they do have cancer. And we're going to have that one in 10,000 person benefit. But in order for that one person to benefit, there's going to have to be 5 mastectomies of ladies who actually do have cancer, and one of them is going to have improved survival as a result of it. The other 4 would have survived anyway. Now, one thing we didn't count was for every 10,000 women who undergo this process, 2.25 are going to get breast cancer who would not have gotten it had they not been screened. And that's really a tragedy. So, now, the next thing to look at is, okay, so we figured out that lady gets diagnosed at time zero. In 5 years, 20% of them are dead. But in the next 30 years, 15% more die. So what does this death look like? And these are deaths from breast cancer. We're not counting other types of death, although that is a good question. So at best, 0.2 of the 2,000 women could be said to survive as a result of getting a mammogram early. But wait, let's look further at the data. If a therapy is applied and it is effective, women expect maximal benefit at the point of using it. And the benefit might last for a little while after, and once the effect wore off, we would expect to see an increase in the disease. Okay? Or we expect that the disease would drop down or improve, and that improvement would be sustained if the therapy is effective. So, for example, if a person gets effective therapy, then their risk of disease or harm should become low, and once the treatment is stopped, the disease should increase or remain at zero. So if the disease does not go away during the intervention, and the frequency of disease continues to decline once the intervention is ended, the decline must be due to something other than the intervention or therapy. This is a pattern we see with breast cancer. So with breast cancer, looking at trends and outcomes overcomes a bias in study design, observation bias, or interpretation bias. So one example is, just to make this really clear, is pneumonia. So a person has pneumonia and they're sick. And they get treated for pneumonia and they get better. The pneumonia is gone, and that's pretty much the end of it. They might get pneumonia again from another source or something else happens, but they're, you know, that's pretty much the end of it. What if a person got pneumonia, and then all of a sudden the death rate from pneumonia increased, and then the pneumonia didn't go away, but over time fewer and fewer people seem to die of it? Well, you have to say the therapy for the pneumonia was unrelated to the person's progress, because while they were getting the therapy, that's when you had the greatest amount of death. So the therapy can't really, you can't say it was life-saving therapy. So this is the way it is with mammograms. So with mammogram, you have an intervention. The amount of harm is maximal during the intervention, which is chemotherapy and mastectomy recovery period, but declines steadily after the intervention is removed. So the most favorable conclusion is the intervention was ineffective, and the most negative conclusion is that the intervention caused the harm. Those are 20% deaths in the first 5 years after the diagnosis of cancer, breast cancer, epidemiologically appears to be linked to the therapy, not to the disease. But whichever interpretation you pick, the suggested course of action is to forego the intervention. In this case, that would be to forego or skip the mammograms. So trends, again, to repeat, the chance of recurrence of cancer is highest in the first 5 years after diagnosis of breast cancer and declines after that. This suggests that the intervention is not effective and that time is the real cure here. So actually, as we said, 80% of women who get breast cancer will die of something else. Well, not die of something else, but die outside that 5 year period, so diagnosis first 5 years, 80% actually survive that. And so the pattern of benefit followed by loss of benefit is not seen. So we should see a decline in breast cancer followed by an actual uptick in breast cancer once the chemo and everything is stopped. We should see that, oh, the chemo is wearing off, the breast cancer frequency is increasing. No, that's not what we see. What we see is a steady decline in the absence of any further therapy. So what does this mean? It sounds like mutilation, mutilation, and more mutilation. So there is no cancer prevention going on because mammogram detects cancer once it's already happened. So mammogram is not a way of preventing cancer. It can't prevent cancer because it's not designed. It's only designed to detect cancer once it happens. Okay, so it's not preventing anything. So is it preventing death? Well, at best, it's preventing somewhere between 0 and 0.2 per 2,000. Put that in big numbers, it's preventing anywhere from 0 deaths to 1 in 10,000. This was such an incredibly small number that I actually started looking at other things that don't happen very often, but we'll get to that. So breast cancer screening rate, by the way, in 10 years, this past 10 years, has remained steady. Yet the cancer rate has dropped 10%, and death rate from breast cancer has dropped 20%. This is all good news. However, because the mammogram screening rate hasn't changed, we cannot attribute any of this to the screening rate. So we can't, the decline in death rate, we cannot attribute to mammograms because mammograms are not therapeutic. The decline in cancer, we cannot attribute to mammograms because mammograms don't prevent cancer, they just detect cancer. So if something else going on is causing women to get less breast cancer, I think that's a great thing. But one thing we do know is it's not mammograms. We said screening only prevents a woman from getting cancer when it's present. And subsequent surgery done as a result of mammogram, again, is not necessary in about 91% of cases when it's done as a result of screening. So therefore, it's safe to say that the decrease in breast cancer is unrelated to getting mammograms. Since the rate of mammograms has been studied at 72.4%, this is from the CDC 2010, while the rate of cancer has fallen, and we know the mammogram actually increases the frequency of cancer, then the mammogram is not preventing cancer and it's not improving survival, although these things have improved. And we'll get to why they've improved. So economic action, what are we going to do about this? One thing you can do is take economic action. When I was a kid, we had this joke, how do you stop a bull from charging? The answer, take away its charge card. Now, this was a child's joke 30 years ago, but it's very true. The brutal bull, which is the knife of the surgeon, can be stopped by just refusing to pay for such procedures. Simply refusing to pay for any mastectomy done as a result of a screening mammogram, because 90% are not medically necessary or beneficial to the woman, and refuse to pay for any removal of a normal breast in a woman who has no chance of benefiting from the surgery. This would be a woman with cancer. For example, a lot of times women have cancer in one breast, and a doctor says, you know what, while I have you asleep, let me just take off both breasts. I'll charge you double the surgery fee, and we won't double the anesthesia fee. How's that? And the lady said, oh, my God, what a deal. It turns out that taking off the normal breast in a lady who has breast cancer in one breast is usually of no benefit. So a woman who has cancer in one breast but no breast cancer gene or no family history of breast cancer doesn't need the other breast taken off. It's not going to help her. All it's going to do is slow up her recovery and make her sicker longer. So once it's no longer paid for, the doctor will not do the procedure. In medical school, in 1983, we were taught that a procedure is obsolete when the insurance company will no longer pay for it. Notice that patient preference, medical benefit are not mentioned as criteria for obsolescence. That is a program to stop doing procedures the insurance company will refuse to pay for. So because doctors are really trained, I mean, this is a thrill hole in them, this is a simple policy tweak where medical costs could be reduced, medical benefit increased, and surgical mutilation eliminated. So your chances of benefiting from a mammogram, by the way, 0.2 in 2000, is roughly equal to your chances of being, your lifetime risk chance of being struck by lightning. So benefits from mammogram are zero. Benefits from mastectomy done as a result of the mammogram are just about zero. Now, that's one recourse, is to stop paying for the stuff. What's the next recourse? The next recourse will require a change in attitude. And this is a change in attitude on the part of women, but I think also on the part of our society. I checked out this website. It's called womenshealth.gov. So I'm guessing it has something to do with the government putting this stuff up there. Anyway, it's a website. It talks about sexual assault. What is sexual assault? So sexual assault, what they're saying is using the word rape, which I think is a pretty strong word, but what the heck. So they're saying that rape or attempted rape is touching of your body and making you or allowing this touching and without consent. And so how do you know consent is not given? So consent is not given when a person has not given consent to being touched, if they merely went along with what someone was doing because they were threatened or otherwise scared. Now, this fits every woman who does a mammogram. Most women who have mammograms are scared. They feel threatened that they're going to die if they don't get this done. And this is touching of a sexual part of their body, their breasts. So this is sexual touching without consent. That's what a mammogram is. And this falls under the category of sexual assault. And again, it goes on to say, this is government website, if the accused uses a position of authority to coerce someone into consenting, for example, relationship authority are those between doctors and patients. This is covered. And also, when injuries caused by the assault are non-trivial, I would say the mutilation of unnecessary biopsies is non-trivial, and I would say the mutilation of getting breasts removed that don't need to be removed because the person who doesn't really have cancer is non-trivial. So this is a case where first women need to realize that a mammogram and all recommendations that flow from the mammogram are actually simply sexual assault, every bit as much as rape. Now, I say this because I have just been incredibly amazed that when women just simply change their way of looking at things, change the way of thinking of things, that the whole world just boom, in a blink, changes. So I'm offering this new framework of viewing the mammogram as simply a form of sexual assault, a form of rape, a form of coercion, a form of mutilation, or simply a initiating act to justify mutilation. I think that would really decrease the amount of criminal mutilation going on here. Now, what else can you do if you're not so given to dramatic visualization? You can just follow the lead of 27% of women who don't get screenings. 27% of women don't get screenings. They just don't do it. Yet the rate of breast cancer and death from breast cancer have declined. So I say these ladies are onto something. So the rate of screening has remained the same, which indicates the decline in incidence of breast cancer. Obviously, decline in death from breast cancer are due to something other than mammograms. So here's the good part of today's talk. It turns out people have been doing research, not only people, for Christ's sake, your own government, and they know exactly what it takes, and so has the Mayo Clinic, by the way, to prevent breast cancer. And it's absolutely shocking. So let's go over these things you can do very simply to prevent breast cancer. First of all, you can have a full-term pregnancy before the age of 20. Whoa, did you hear that? A full-term pregnancy before the age of 20 cuts breast cancer risk in half. This is phenomenal. This means that if every woman in the United States made it her business to have her first baby as a teenager, say at 19 years and 11 months of age, then instead of 10% of American women dying of breast cancer or getting breast cancer in their lifetime, it would drop to 5%. That is absolutely phenomenal. Since most women plan to have a baby anyway, why not have the first one as a teenager? And for this, us old-timers, people who have children who are having children, we can say, wow, if all I need to do is help my daughter raise this first kid until she gets to be 22 or something, whatever, that's easier for me to do than to watch her go through the mutilation of mammograms and ultimately nurse her back to health after her mastectomy. So, teenage pregnancy, the thing our government has been advising us against, actually would cut breast cancer risk in half. It also reduces ovarian and endometrial cancers as well, by the way. This, to me, is a definite case of use it or lose it. Next thing is increasing the number of births. Now, a lot of women, a lot of families say, oh, we can only afford two children. Turns out the more kids you have, the less your chances are of having breast cancer. And so a lot of people say, well, you can't afford to have kids. Again, in a prior episode I talked about, which was humans, the new cash crop, you can actually raise children at a marginal cost of $250 per kid per year. And to that, I refer you to my prior episode, Humans, the New Cash Crop, and tell you all about it. That's the way I raised my kids. I'm telling you, it was a gas. And exercise of any kind, drastically reduces your incidence of breast cancer by anywhere from 10 to 30%. I would like to mention exercise just to some people are so sedentary that they don't even really know what exercise is. And for me, being a doctor, I mean, I was chained to a chair for 4 years of my life in my 20s for 8 hours a day. So definitely, you know, a sedentary lifestyle was enforced. So exercise. Exercise is simply walking 30 minutes a day. That is exercise. And that's actually a pretty good bit of exercise in terms of your health. Anything above and beyond that, you can do because you like it, pleasure, whatever. Next, we have to talk about ending pregnancy. Some people get pregnant, say, oh, I don't want to get pregnant, I don't want to have this baby, and they decide to have an abortion. It turns out that your breast cancer risk, if you do not carry the baby to term, your breast cancer risk, if you have an abortion, is the same as it would be if you had never become pregnant. And so there's a lot of talk that if you don't have the baby, if you have an abortion, it raises your breast cancer risk. It's not exactly true. If you carried the baby all the way to term and gave birth, then carrying the baby all the way to term and giving birth would have reduced your breast cancer risk. But ending the pregnancy early means that you don't have any cancer reduction risk due to the pregnancy. So what does the Mayo Clinic have to say about this? We just heard what the government says. What does the Mayo Clinic say? Well, Mayo Clinic says that your risk of breast cancer increases if you get pregnant after the age of 30. So if you give birth to your baby after the age of 30, your breast cancer risk is greater than had you never had any children at all. Now, this is shocking because so many women are being told, get your education first, get your education first. And so what happens when you get your education first? And then you build this big debt, then you got to pay down your debt, and then you're ready to have kids when you're 35 or 40. Well, you become an excellent breast cancer patient. Excellent breast cancer patient. Also, hormone replacement therapy. So if you go to your doctor recommends hormone replacement therapy for your menopausal situation, then that increases your risk of breast cancer. And birth control pills. It turns out any medications, a combination of estrogen and progesterone, no matter what dose, increases your breast cancer risk. So if you're going to use birth control of some kind, then you don't want to use an estrogen-progesterone combination. Now, although they, you know, regular standard establishment acknowledges that birth control pills do increase the risk of breast cancer, there's not agreement as to how much the risk is increased. Next, radiation exposure, such as CAT scans, increase the risk of breast cancer. Notice they did not mention mammograms here, but we know mammograms do increase the risk of breast cancer by 225 per million mammograms that are done to the population. So one lady does not need to get a million mammograms. So if they just do mammograms on ladies, then and a million mammograms are done, 225 of those ladies, we don't know which ones, are going to get breast cancer as a result of those mammograms. And this list was compiled by the Mayo Clinic. Now, I want all you to notice that having mammograms is not on the list of ways to reduce your breast cancer risk. Not recommended even by the mammogram guides. So mammograms were listed under what else you can do besides prevent breast cancer. It's like, if you can't prevent breast cancer, I guess you could get a mammogram. But mammogram is not a way to prevent breast cancer or even death from breast cancer. And the Mayo Clinic also does not believe that diet has anything to do with it. So the things that have a mega impact on your breast cancer have nothing to do with mammograms. This is absolutely, to my mind, really shocking. Now, also, recent research has shown or has tied use of antibiotics to breast cancer. This is very, very interesting. Women who have had more than 6 courses of antibiotics have a frequency of breast cancer on average about 30% more than women who have not had repetitive courses of antibiotics. So what's going on with this, you know? Why is this the case? Well, it turns out that you have an immune system, and your immune system is filled with things called good bacteria. And there are thousands of good bacteria. And, of course, modern science / medicine doesn't even really know what all these organisms do. But we do know that collectively these good guys, so to speak, patrol the body, maintain the integrity of the body, make sure bad things don't happen, manufacture enzymes, manufacture vitamins, and do all kinds of things to keep your body in tip-top shape. Every time you take an antibiotic, a lot of the good guys die. And they never come back. They never get replaced or rejuvenated. And so each time you take antibiotics, it destroys more and more of your immune system. And your immune system is not able to maintain itself and prevent things like cancers. So this is why it is so absolutely, totally important to minimize your exposure to antibiotics, reduce your exposure to antibiotics. And so it's a good reason to stop by my website, vitalitycapsules.com, sign up to my list and get your free gift, 10 non-antibiotic interventions for 10 common illnesses. And I just want to pause here for station identification. You are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and, as I said, get your free gift, 9 antibiotic solutions to 10 common infections. That is VitalityCapsules.com. So, of course, I welcome your calls and questions. And the number is 914-338-0695. Now, what other things are going on with this breast cancer thing? The important thing to understand with breast cancer, mammograms, is that the function of female breasts has been altered, has been changed. The function of women's breasts now is they have been totally subordinated in the service of a multi-billion dollar industry. And that's actually what has happened. Women have been terrorized into being afraid of their breasts. They've been terrorized and really misinformed into getting their breasts cut off just in case. And all the evidence is that this is not only not necessary, but it's not effective. So women are getting bilateral mastectomies and still having cancer. And that is shocking, that's crushing, and it's absolutely devastating. And I personally think it's a form of deceptive advertising, to say the least. But definitely check out vitalitycapsules.com. Get your report. At least eliminate the antibiotic use. Many women who are listening to this are probably beyond their childbearing years, so having a baby as a teenager is not really an option, or having a baby at least before their 30th birthday is not an option. But there are a lot of other things you can do. Also, the biggest, absolute biggest risk factor for breast cancer is smoking cigarettes. So smoking cigarettes, believe it or not, is the number one risk for breast cancer. So the thing to do is to quit smoking cigarettes. And a lot of people say, oh, I can't do that. Oh, it's so difficult. No, it's not. Well, I should say no, it's not. It is difficult if you don't know how to do it. How do you quit smoking cigarettes? Very simple. You take licorice root, which is a root, it's called licorice root, and you make a tea out of it, and you drink it every day. What this does is it rebuilds the adrenal glands. Cigarettes actually conceal or kind of plaster over failure of the adrenal glands, generally induced by coffee drinking, but that's another story. But if you drink licorice root tea, that'll heal your adrenal glands. Next thing you need to do is you need to take vitamins B-complex 50. If you take 2 a day of these, then you will notice that your desire to smoke cigarettes just declines. And as your cigarette desire declines, just smoke less. Like, oh, geez, I don't feel like a cigarette. You just don't smoke a cigarette. Other thing is food choices. If you eat sugar and white flour, then your desire for cigarettes will just skyrocket because sugar and white flour deplete your B vitamins. So get rid of that pasta, noodles, and bread, and eat brown rice, quinoa, and millet instead. And that will go a long way. So get rid of the cigarettes. The next thing that is a risk for breast cancer is drinking alcohol. So if you're drinking alcohol, again, that suppresses the immune system, and that's going to give you a much higher risk of breast cancer. So quitting the alcohol is similar to quitting cigarettes. Again, stock up on those B vitamins, B complex 50 two a day, stick them every single day. Alcohol is different than cigarettes. It's not so much the adrenal glands, it's the minerals. So take magnesium oxide. Again, not meant to diagnose, treat, or cure the disease, but what the heck, give it a try. Talk to your health expert or healthcare provider professional first. So alcohol, just a matter of B complex 50 and magnesium oxide. Take that every day, and you will be shocked. You just say, I feel great. I just don't really feel like I need alcohol. And so alcohol, cigarettes, and obesity after menopause. Now, obesity after menopause is a false marker. Obesity after menopause is a marker for hormone replacement. Because if you take hormone replacement therapy, it's your female hormones, and they cause weight gain, and they cause a lot of this obesity after menopause. And so if you stop the hormone replacement, much of the obesity will also go away as well. So obesity after menopause is kind of wrapped up in the whole hormone replacement thing. And if you stop the hormone replacement, it'll be much easier to lose weight or to get rid of obesity. And then for obesity, you can just check out 911weightlossnow.com. That's 911weightlossnow.com, and you'll see that I have an excellent, easy-to-follow program to help you get rid of obesity as well, again, naturally, without drugs or anything. So these are all very manageable risk factors for preventing breast cancer. And you can do these in the privacy of your own home. You don't need to go buy expensive health insurance. You don't need to take 3 hours out of your day to go get an uncomfortable mammogram. And you don't need to sit on pins and needles waiting for the unreliable, erroneous results, which will more than likely result in mutilation. And what else is there to say? Just that, it's really tough in these days and times when you have such incredibly authoritative information sources giving you information that is so unreliable. And there's one success expert, a historian, who said, if you want to really get something solved and you have a problem, look at what everyone else is doing and do the exact opposite. So, for example, for if you're trying to avoid breast cancer, what's everyone doing? Answer it, mammograms. Do the exact opposite. Don't do any mammograms. It's just so true with whatever challenge you have in life. Just look around and see what everyone else is doing and do the exact opposite. And you'll just be shocked at how well the whole thing will work out. Well, I'd like to do one more station identification, and then we'll see you next week. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and definitely get your free gift, Non-Antibiotic Solutions to 10 Common Infections. That's VitalityCapsules.com. And it's been wonderful talking to you, and look forward to seeing you next week, same time, same place, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Healing with Dr. Daniels on BlakeRadio.com.